In 1992, when New York State Assemblyman Dick Gottfried introduced a bill to bring single-payer health care to New York State. And depending on who you ask, for the past 22 years, well, his efforts have not succeeded. The bill has gone nowhere. But Assemblyman Gottfried is touring the state this month, hosting public forums, believing that we are closer than ever to moving towards single-payer for a number of reasons. Rochester's public forum is yesterday. There was no shortage of interest. And this hour, we're going to try to sort out what a New York State single-payer system would look like. What does the medical community say, if you can speak in any sort of broad terms? What about the business community? We'll check in with our public radio colleagues in Vermont, which is a state planning to move to single-payer as soon as 2017. My colleague Michelle Faust has been reporting on the ACA as well as other medical issues. She's helping anchor our conversation for this hour. Michelle, great to have you in studio as always.
Oh, thank you.
And let's go ahead and welcome our guests. In studio, we do have Assemblyman Richard Gottfried from Manhattan, chairman of the Assembly Committee on Health, and the man behind the New York Health Act since 1992, Dick, right?
Right.
Well, thank you for taking the time to join us in studio in Rochester.
Well, I'm very happy to be here.
And certainly a significant turnout yesterday. We're going to be talking about that and more. Dr. David Stornelli's here, a primary care internist in Rochester and the former president of Physicians for a National Health Plan. Dr. Stornelli, nice to see you.
Thank you.
And on the line with us, we've got Sean Parnell. He's a research fellow for health policy at the Heartland Institute. Sean, thank you for taking the time to join us for the hour.
Thank you for having me on.
This hour, we want to hear from our listeners. And if you've got questions about how single payer would work, you can call the program. The number is 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255. We're going to take calls, especially in the second half of this hour. But first, we want to let our guests describe sort of their outline of single payer. And we've tried to put together a panel that has diverse interests in this issue. Let me start with Assemblyman Gottfried. Give us a sense for how this bill, if it becomes law, how it works in sort of broad strokes, Assemblyman.
Well, you know, under the Affordable Care Act, it's made a lot of improvements, but the basic problem that we face is that it leaves our health coverage in the hands of insurance companies. That means that people face serious financial obstacles from premiums and deductibles and copayments and out-of-network charges standing between them and the healthcare they need. People suffer devastating healthcare impacts, devastating financial impacts. We really don't need insurance companies standing in the way of our healthcare. And if we had a universal public health coverage system, we would each be able to take control of our health care and take full responsibility for our health care. The system that the bill would create would have New York paying health care providers. The health care providers would not be working for the state. They'd work for a hospital. They'd be in private practice, what have you. The state program, the New York Health Program, would pay the bill. And instead of us spending tens of billions of dollars on premiums and deductibles and copayments and out-of-network charges, New Yorkers would be spending probably $20 billion or more less than we now spend. We would be raising that money through broad-based assessments that are based on ability to pay instead of really regressive charges that we now pay to insurance companies that have no relation to ability to pay. And really, for the first time, New Yorkers would have direct access to care between them and their healthcare provider without the insurance company middleman.
And real briefly, give me an outline for structurally, if this thing actually went forward, give me a sense for how long it would take to implement, to get it on the ground.
Well, you know, implementing something in the state of New York can be pretty complicated. It would probably take, I would estimate, a year or two from the time the governor signs the bill. You know, in 1965, when Lyndon Johnson signed the Medicare law, 11 months later, Medicare was paying claims. And that was in an era of dial telephones and carbon paper. Unfortunately, government processes have gotten enormously more complicated to set something up. So it would take a year or two, but at the end of that, we would finally have a healthcare system that is driven by healthcare needs and where the dollars we spend would be fewer, but would all be spent on health care.
Dr. Stornelli has been supporting a plan of this ilk for a long time, and we've seen the medical community, interestingly, as Michelle and I prepared for this program, we reached out to a lot of people in the business community, the medical community. The medical community in general has been either neutral or it has not been difficult to find physicians or doctors who wanted to come in and support single payer. It was a little more difficult to find opposition, but certainly we're going to talk to Sean Parnell in a moment from the Heartland Institute. Dr. Stornelli, why do you support Assemblyman Godfrey's plan, especially in light of the fact that a lot of people had hoped that Obamacare would alleviate some of the concerns that people have had for lack of insurance coverage and other issues?
My initial interest in single payer started very soon after I began practicing about 16 years ago. One of the very first patients that I took care of was a young man who had a tumor in his leg that he had watched grow for over 2 years and had not sought medical attention because he didn't have health insurance. And it wasn't until he got a job that provided health insurance that he came to seek attention, which was in my clinic. And I diagnosed him with a sarcoma, which unfortunately had already widely metastasized. And I saw him, I took care of him for the next 4 years while he went through surgeries, chemotherapy, radiation, suffered tremendously. I saw his family suffer, and eventually he died, and he was the same age as me. He was 30 years old at the time that he first came to see me. And that's when I really took a hard look at our system that does not provide access to healthcare to everyone, that somehow links your access to healthcare with your job or lack thereof. And I just felt that there has to be a better way. And in looking at how healthcare is delivered around the world, came to realize that we're really the only industrial country in the world who does it this way. And we have higher costs than any other country in the world. We have worse outcomes than any other industrialized country. And that's really the story of why I became interested in this.
Sean Parnell is on the line as a research fellow for the health policy at the Heartland Institute. Sean, where is Dr. Stornelli wrong?
Well, I think, first of all, he's definitely right that there has to be a better way than both the current system under the Affordable Care Act as well as what we had before. I think that the mistake that he makes, or at least one of the mistakes, is thinking that going in the direction of government control, having the government decide what sort of care is available, what prices will be paid for different services. I think he's wrong in believing that that is the direction that we need to go in. I think that the direction we actually want to go in is more towards markets in healthcare, where individual patients are paying directly for as much of the healthcare as they can, instead of going through the insurance companies. I happen to agree with the assemblyman, that insurance companies, while I think they have their place, I think that there's a lot of waste that goes on. Having an insurance company process medical bills that are, you know, $50, $60, $70, $100, $200, that's extremely inefficient. And if we simply moved towards a more market-oriented system where people were paying directly for the health care that they need while having some sort of a safety net, obviously, to help people who aren't able to access health care with their own resources, I think that's a better direction that we need to be going in.
Assemblyman Gottfried?
Well, first of all, under the New York Health Act, government would not be controlling what health care is available, whether for all of society or for individuals. It would have totally comprehensive scope of benefits, and it would be up to you and your health care provider to decide what health care you should be receiving, and that's how it should be. The payment levels and payment methodologies would be set by the plan, but I think that's a big improvement over having private insurance companies whose only concern is is what they can send to their stockholders, controlling all of that. And under the New York Health Act, there would be negotiation between the New York Health Plan and healthcare providers. As to this idea that we should be going out into the marketplace buying healthcare the way we buy, bread or a car, you can get perfectly fine in life whether you eat macaroni and cheese or fettuccine Alfredo. You're probably healthier eating the macaroni and cheese. But healthcare is different. The healthcare that costs the millionaire $10,000 really, as a human right, ought to be available for the janitor in the millionaire's office building, even though that person could never afford $10,000. With our current system, even the money that people have to spend in the marketplace under deductibles, we've seen case after case where, as the doctor pointed out, where people fail to go in even for preliminary testing because of what the marketplace makes them pay under the name of a deductible. There should not be financial barriers between people getting health care any more than if we said, why don't we make parents personally spend thousands of dollars a year to send their kids to kindergarten. Any philosopher or elected official who suggested that would be laughed out of town, if not run out of town on a rail.
I think Sean Parnell's got to respond, and I only have one more question, and I'm going to try to step back for the rest of the hour and let the smarter people in the room handle this discussion. But what Sean Parnell is saying and what Assemblyman Gottfried is saying leads to me to an important question. Does everybody on this panel agree, or is there disagreement over this idea? And the idea is your quality of health care should not be based on your income. I think David Stornelli is making that claim pretty clearly in the story that he's relating. Assemblyman Gottfried, is that a statement you agree with?
Profoundly, yes.
Sean Parnell, is that something that the Heartland Institute agrees with?
Well, I speak for myself, not the Heartland Institute, but yeah, I agree that people should not be denied care because they can't pay for it.
It's not a matter of denied care. We're talking about the quality of care. Should there be an egalitarian approach to health care that says what you make, Assemblyman Gottfried brought up the millionaire and then the janitor in his office. Should they essentially have the exact same health care? Sean?
I think everybody should have access to the health care they need. I think it's silly to think that somehow, however, everybody is going to have the exact same level of access to health care. Somebody who lives in a rural area is by definition going to wind up with a little less access to certain specialties. That's just the reality of life. And it depends on what you call an egalitarian sort of health care. Not everybody's going to get the best heart specialist.
But I think it's pretty clear that
the best pediatrician.
But I think it's pretty clear that the problem of access to health care in America, there are people who live way out in rural areas where they have transportation issues, but that's not what this discussion is about. The millionaire who lives out in the boondocks should have the same access to care as the janitor who lives out in the boondocks, or if they live in the middle of town.
Well, sure. And frankly, it's kind of a ridiculous discussion. Nobody's arguing that janitors shouldn't have access to the health care that they need. And that's the sort of statement made by advocates of government-run health care that frankly makes it very difficult to have any sort of a real dialogue and discussion.
Well, but if you're...
The underlying assumption that they offer, which is that if you don't favor single-payer health care, you favor people dying. And that's offensive, it's stupid, and frankly, if that's the sort of discussion that the people want to have, I'm not terribly interested in it.
If you say people should only get the health care that they can pay for, or else they die, people would be appalled. But if you say, we should rely on markets, that is saying the same thing.
Well, Sean is saying it isn't, same thing. Let's let Dr. Stornelli weigh in. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to weigh in since I actually take care of patients every day and I actually live this day in and day out. We've actually been doing this experiment for the last 5 or 6 years because over the last 5 or 6 years, the percentage of people in our community who have high deductible health insurance has gone from a very small percentage to a very large percentage. So every day I'm interacting with people who are paying essentially full price out of pocket for every visit and every test that they get and every medication that they purchase. And I can tell you that there has been a dramatic shift over the last 5 or 6 years in the our ability to take care of people with chronic diseases because of high deductible health insurance. So everybody agrees in the medical community that people with diabetes, there are certain things that need to happen. They need to be seen 3 or 4 times a year. They need to have lab tests 3 or 4 times a year. They need to see an eye doctor every year. They should be seeing a podiatrist. They should be meeting with a dietitian. Because of high deductibles, most patients with diabetes are not doing the things that they need to do to control their diabetes. And because of that, they're going to end up with worse outcomes. They're going to end up with more kidney problems, more eye problems, more foot problems, more heart disease, et cetera. So, you know, we've been doing this experiment. We know what the effect is of having people pay out of pocket for their health care. It means that they stay away from the doctor until there's a big problem. That is not the best way to manage people with chronic disease. And that's really, you know, when you come right down to it, it's the chronic diseases that are the big problem in American healthcare. We don't do a good job of taking care of people with chronic diseases.
Well, what the doctor is talking about is correct. However, what he is not really understanding is that one of the reasons those diabetes patients with those high deductibles are having problems paying for their care, there's two reasons, really. The first is they first are paying huge premiums to insurance companies for, frankly, very little benefit. And the other part of the equation that he's not getting is the fact that he, as a doctor, as well as the insurance company, have a tremendous overhead burden because people are running their health care through insurance. If the diabetic who needs to go see a doctor 3 or 4 times a year were simply paying out of pocket, and not having to pay $400, $500, $600 a month, whatever it is, for their health insurance premium, then all of a sudden they have the money to go see the doctor. When I talk about people paying directly for health care, it's not paying a huge premium to an insurance company and then having to pay a huge deductible. It's paying a very small premium for health insurance for the truly catastrophic things, things like a heart attack, things like cancer. But your routine day-to-day costs that cost $100 here, $50 there, relatively low cost, those costs come down once you remove things from the insurance process. One of the biggest problems, I'm a fan of health savings accounts, but one of the biggest problems with health savings accounts is that the doctor's offices are still running them through the whole insurance process. Even though the HSA holder is there with their credit card or their checkbook to pay the bill, they still have to run it through the entire insurance process to find out what the price is. And it's just ridiculous. We have this massive bureaucratic overhead, and there's no reason to believe that it's not going to be the same thing under single payer. If you just, when I talk about the market in healthcare, I'm talking about a real market where the provider sets the price and the patient has the funds to go and pay for that.
You know, I've never met a person who says, I'm so glad I changed jobs because now I don't have health insurance and now I've got the money to go get healthcare. That doesn't happen. People who don't pay health insurance premiums have much less access to health care than people who do. And when you pay a health insurance premium for what I think most people might consider catastrophic care, which is to say care with an $8,000 or a $12,000 deductible, even people with those high deductible plans are paying an arm and a leg in premiums. As premiums have been skyrocketing, deductibles have been going up even faster. The share of the health care cost that workers have to pay out of pocket has been going up. The notion that people should go without coverage, or maybe coverage only for things more than what, $10,000, $20,000? I don't know, you know, Sean, what you make, but people who make $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 if you tell them, well, you can be responsible for the first $10,000 or $15,000 in healthcare, that's devastating to them.
And I can tell you from my personal experience, I take care of patients who make very little money and patients who make a lot of money. And the behavior is the same. When they are on a high deductible plan, there is a, you know, regardless of their ability to pay, they just don't come to the doctor as they should. It's a human behavior that if you have to pay out of pocket at the doctor's office, you're less likely to go. And on the basis of the overhead, I completely agree. I mean, I think that there's way too much overhead in our system. And I actually disagree, though, that a single payer would not fix that problem. I think it would.
Now, doctor, I don't want to get too far away from this whole concept of single payer, but isn't that the point of a high deductible plan? The point is to have consumers paying attention to the costs and not just allowing another payer take care of that cost. I mean, that's the whole point.
Right. And the issue that the point that I'm trying to make is that really what we're talking about with our health care system is management of chronic diseases. And putting a financial barrier to managing chronic diseases costs all of us more in the long run, not less. And a lot of what the Affordable Care Act is trying to do is improve the care of patients with chronic diseases. And however, the insurance structure that we have, the way things are that are set up now, is a direct barrier to that happening.
Let me reset what's going on here. If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking single payer. My colleague Michelle Faust is here. And Michelle, by the way, let's let our listeners know right now, this conversation is just one of many we had on healthcare issues. You've been working on ACA coverage. What's going on WXXI News online, by the way?
Yeah, so WXXI.org/ACA is where we house all of the work that we're doing, understanding the Affordable Care Act project. And this is just one thing that came up many times when we first announced that we were doing it. And we're still asking all of our listeners, if you have questions about the Affordable Care Act, to please send it to us. You can do that by taking our survey at the website, WXXI.org/ACA, or sending us an email at ACAWXXI@WXXI.org. But one of the first things, as soon as we announced this, as soon as we said we're doing the survey, people said single payer, mentioned single payer. It's been brought up over and over again. This is one of the reasons why I said we have to do this story.
Well, and when Assemblyman Gottfried got to town, we wanted to have this conversation. So our guests in studio include Assemblyman Richard Gottfried from Manhattan. He's the chairman of the Assembly Committee on Health and author of the New York Health Act, the man behind the plan to bring single payer to New York State. It hasn't gone anywhere in 22 years. The question is that about to change? Dr. David Stornelli is in studio, a primary care internist in Rochester, the former president of the Physicians for National Health Plan, and on the line with us is Sean Parnell, a research fellow for health policy at the Heartland Institute. We've got the phones lighting up now. Here's what we need to do. If you are on the line, your questions are going to be answered this hour. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to hear from Vermont Public Radio and learn what's going on there. We'll come back and see if that's a scalable plan, if that's a lesson to learn from as Vermont moves towards single payer. And we'll hear more of your comments as well. So that's next. If you're on the line, stay there. We're coming to you right here on member-supported public radio. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections. Do we need villages anymore? Governor Andrew Cuomo campaigned largely against extra layers of government, including villages. He says it's contributing to high tax rates. We'll hear from village leaders locally about why they say villages are still vital. Then second hour, we meet a doctor moving from Rochester to Canada to find what she calls a better health system. Join us Wednesday.
After serving in World War II, many veterans came home to serve again in Congress.
The first big surge happened during the 46 elections. Roughly 70 World War II vets elected to the 80th Congress.
The next Congress will have no World War II vets. A generation leaves the public stage. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that's coming up at 4 this afternoon on your public radio station.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And before we get to your phone calls, I had a chance to speak this morning to Bob Kinzel, who's a senior reporter for VPR, that's Vermont Public Radio, and had a chance to talk to him about Vermont's move towards single payer. For those of us who are in states that are considering bills, like Assemblyman Gottfried, I thought there were some interesting questions to find out what's going on in Vermont. Let's listen to that conversation.
That would be back in 2011 when the legislature passed the Green Mountain Care Law. And what that did was it established a new board called the Green Mountain Care Board that was going to oversee virtually every aspect of health care in Vermont. We're talking about things like regulating insurance companies and premiums, hospital budgets. I mean, they do everything. And included in that bill was a plan to have single payer go into effect to seek a waiver from the federal government as early as 2017. Now, it also called for a financing plan to be released in January of 2013. Governor Peter Shumlin was supposed to do that. He decided to delay that in January of 2013, and he put it off until January of 2014. Then he put it off again because he said he just wasn't ready to do it, and he's actually going to do it at the end of this month. So we've had this idea since 2011 that Vermont could move towards a single-payer system, but it wouldn't happen any earlier than 2017.
And so now with the delays from the governor, and assuming he still delivers that plan at the end of this month, even if he does, has it been delayed enough that 2017 is unrealistic? I mean, is single-payer going to happen, if it happens at all in Vermont, much later as a result?
I think it's unlikely that it's going to happen by 2017, and one reason why is we've had just a terrible experience with our health care exchange under the Affordable Care Act. It's known as Vermont Health Connect. The website didn't work at all for a while. Then businesses couldn't go online and buy their premiums. And I should mention that Vermont is the only state in the country that requires all individuals and small businesses, so those are businesses with fewer than 50 employees, these groups of people have to go through the exchange. It's mandated by state law. So when the website didn't work, I mean, it threw everything into chaos here. And I think the fact that now it's a year later, the website still doesn't work very well. There are a lot of problems with it. It's really undermined public support for single payer. Now, understanding single payer and the healthcare exchange are two different things, but still, I think even the most ardent supporters of single payer would say, you know, public support for some kind of government healthcare program has been seriously undermined because of the experience, the really terrible experience of Vermont Health Connect.
We're talking to Bob Kinzel, senior reporter for Vermont Public Radio, talking about Green Mountain Healthcare, single payer in Vermont, and what we might learn from that. So you're talking about some of the bumps in the road so far. What has the medical community there said about this plan?
Well, the medical community looks at this and has a lot of uncertainty because they don't know exactly what the plan is. And that's what's sort of interesting in this whole debate. We've just come through a gubernatorial election and legislative election, and people lining up, are you for or are you against single payer? Well, nobody's defined what it is. We don't have a financing plan, so nobody knows how it's going to be paid for. We don't have a benefit package, so nobody knows what's going to be covered. Things like deductibles and copayments, nobody has any clue. So people in the medical community, and I would say many people in the business community, look at this with great uncertainty and wonder, is this going to be a good thing? They really need to see the details before they can make that judgment. And that's sort of another thing that is clouding this whole discussion, is all the uncertainty.
What has Governor Shumlin said about the delays, the justification for the delay, and whether his own enthusiasm has dampened for single payer?
He says he is full board with single payer. When he had his kickoff for his campaign back in June, he made it very clear that single payer was still his top priority. Now, he would say that the experience of Vermont Health Connect, our state healthcare exchange, because it was so bad that the administration really had to work to get that up and running, and that's taken time away from putting together a financing plan. Now, he says the financing plan will be coming out in about 2 weeks. I think he's going to stick to that schedule. He wants lawmakers to take a look at it before the session starts in the beginning of January. And most likely it's going to be a payroll tax for businesses, something in the neighborhood of 8%. And then it will also include some kind of income tax surcharge for individuals, because the governor says he wants people to pay for their health care based on their ability to pay. So in his mind, if you're making $100,000 a year and you get this new Green Mountain Care policy, if you're making $100,000 a year, in his mind, you should be paying twice as much as the person who makes $50,000 a year. So you can see they have to work through the details of this, and he would say, because of the problems with Vermont Health Connect, he wants to make sure that when this financing plan is actually released, that it's going to work.
I should also say that I asked you what the medical community thinks, as if the medical community is a monolith. It is not, nor is the business community. There's going to be varying views here. But, you know, here in New York State, here in Western New York, there have been some concerns offered privately, some publicly, by the business community that a single-payer system would have deleterious effects on retaining and luring new businesses. Has the same claim been made in Vermont, and have you seen any businesses actually planning to leave if single-payer rolls out?
Those same concerns have definitely been raised, Evan, and I think until we see the details of the plan, no one's going to know for sure. But as you said, the business community in Vermont is very split. You can see some business groups who think it's a great idea to have single-payer, who love the idea of divorcing somebody's health care coverage from their place of work. There are other businesses who are very concerned about this. Maybe it's a business that doesn't offer insurance right now. Can they afford to pay an 8% payroll tax? Now, most likely for those businesses that don't offer insurance now, this payroll tax is going to be phased in over a period of time. But I think there's a lot of concern, and it's that uncertainty. You know, it'd be one thing if this plan was out there, and people could say, okay, here's the benefit package. This is what's covered. This is what is not covered. This is how you're going to pay for it. Then everybody would say, well, I either like it or I don't, or I have mixed feelings about it. But I think certainly in the business community, uncertainty is the absolutely worst situation to have, and that's where we are right now.
That's Bob Kinzel, senior reporter with Vermont Public Radio, describing why he no longer thinks they're on track for a 2017 launch of single-payer in Vermont. Michelle Faust?
Now, when it comes to Green Mountain Care, it's very interesting. A lot of things that came out nationally looking at this, and a lot of people are saying, you know what, maybe it'll work. But a lot of people are saying that with the caveat that maybe it'll work because Vermont is the second smallest state by population. It's very few people, about the size of Monroe County.
That's right.
As in terms of population. So they're thinking that maybe it'll work because of that small population size, that you can do it on that scale. But many people say that would not work on a national scale. New York is about 30 times larger in terms of population than Vermont. Assemblymember Gottfried, do you think that that's going to make a difference as in terms of the way that we do it, mm-hmm. if we were to do it in New York State, as opposed to the way things are being done
in
Vermont?
Well, a couple of differences from Vermont. One is that the New York Health Act spells out answers to all of the questions that you are asking and saying were absent in Vermont. The bill spells all that out, number one. Number two, while some things may be easier to do if you're on the scale of Vermont, the larger your pool of patients and your revenue base, actually it's probably a lot easier to run a sound health coverage system in a state the size of New York than one the size of Vermont.
But why do it on the state level when we talk about a large state like New York as opposed to on the national level? Why are you pushing here as opposed to nationally?
It would be great to have this done on a national level, but we all know Washington is an awfully long way from doing anything like this. Historically in this country, the states have been what they often call the laboratories of democracy. There are some states, New York is one of them, whose politics, fortunately, are a lot more enlightened than most of the politics in Washington. And I would hope that New York and a couple of states will enact universal health plans, and the folks in Washington will figure out that that's the the direction to go.
Let's get to the phones, which are full. We're going to be going to you on the phones now. Also on the line with us is Sean Parnell from the Heartland Institute, a research fellow for health policy. Dr. David Stornelli from Rochester is in studio with us, along with Assemblyman Richard Gottfried from Manhattan, as we talk single payer. Let me start with Pamela Reese, who's on the line from the Employer Alliance for Affordable Healthcare. Hello?
Hello there.
And I know, Pamela, you've been listening. First of all, just some broad outline thoughts on single payer from your perspective.
Okay, well, we did testify at the Syracuse hearing. My coalition is about 3,000 small businesses. We're a New York State coalition. And we believe that affordable health insurance is a solution to providing some relief for small businesses. I do have to say that we've taken a little bit of a different approach than your panelists, that we have about 20 years of experience showing that the New York State Legislature should not be in the healthcare business, and we provided a set of solutions that would help reduce costs working within the system that we already have.
And what are some of those examples to reduce cost?
Okay, we have, personal responsibility is always something we have to look at. People do have to, and I think it was mentioned earlier, people do have to pay attention to their chronic conditions, and take some, responsibility. Because obviously we're a healthier population, it does reduce the overall cost. More important than that is medical cost transparency. There's a lot of discussion about having the insurance companies disclose their prices, but there's nothing forcing hospitals or medical providers to provide their prices up front. I can take my dog to the vet, and I will know ahead of time how much his medical care is going to cost. But if I go to the doctor for a medical condition, I won't know how much the service is going to cost until the procedure is already performed.
Let me ask the doctor in the room. Dr. Stornelli, you're hearing this concern, and she is saying that you can fix these problems without going to single payer. What do you think?
If that were the case, what I'm looking for is a system that's simplified. I think the biggest problem in our current healthcare financing system is the complexity of it. We have so many different payers, depending on your age, depending on your income level, depending on your employment, and that creates unnecessary complexity. There are different rules depending on what insurance you have. None of that makes care any better. I really don't think that you can just say, well, it's personal responsibility is the answer to solving chronic diseases. That is just kind of oversimplistic.
I don't think that was our only answer. We have about 5 or 6 solutions, and they're not the total. We can't wave a magic wand and immediately solve the problem, but there are steps that we can take today without revamping the entire system.
What you're doing, though, is you're ignoring the experience of the entire industrialized world. And we've tried nibbling around the edges, fixing an already broken system, and that's really what the Affordable Care Act intended to do. And what it's done is it's replaced a incredibly complicated, difficult, and expensive system with an even more complicated, difficult, and more expensive system. So what the rest of the world has figured out is that simpler is better, and having a central financing system for health insurance, and this doesn't mean that the government runs healthcare, it just means that the government finances it, is a much simpler and cost-effective solution.
Well, I think a lot
of...
Go ahead, Sean Parnell. Go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, sorry. What Dr. Stornelli, interestingly enough, is ignoring is that what most of the world has decided is that single payer is not the way to go. Canada and the United Kingdom have what are reasonably called single payer systems. The rest of the industrialized world that he likes to point to does not have single payer. They have systems that have a variety of insurance companies, private hospitals, private insurance, co-pays, deductibles. These are all pre-standard features in most other industrialized countries. I've always been perplexed by that line of argument from single-payer advocates, because really only Canada and the United Kingdom have single-payer. And the national health system in the United Kingdom has incredible problems with access to care. People have tremendously long waits. The quality of care is pretty dodgy. In the United Kingdom, they made the mistake of actually hiring the doctors by the government. And I understand
we really don't have to spend a lot of time beating up on Great Britain, because what we're proposing bears no resemblance to Great Britain.
I understand that. If you look to the north and you look at Canada, what you see are very long waiting lists. You see healthcare cost growth that is pretty much in line with the U.S. It's just that they started at a lower base when they first imposed their single-payer system.
Well, actually, none of that is true. When the Canadian system began, the percentage of gross domestic product that was spent on healthcare in the United States and Canada was just about equal. We now spend 50 to 100% more on healthcare per capita than Canada does, whether it's, you know, per capita or as a percentage of the gross domestic product. The so-called waiting times in Canada are for a small category of fairly high-end procedures, and the reason they have those waits has nothing to do with how they pay for their care. They have to do with the fact that it's hard to maintain advanced surgery and things like that in a country with the population roughly of California spread out in an area three or four times the area of the United States. It's primarily a management problem. They've been overcoming those problems. It has nothing to do with the way they pay for their healthcare system. If you ask Canadians, the most popular thing that their government does is the health plan, and that's partly why they have more doctors per capita in Canada than here in the United States, because their doctors love the work they do because they don't spend so much of their time fighting with insurance companies.
Which explains all of the people who come south to the United States to get treatment that they cannot get up in Canada.
Well, it's not all the people. It's a small handful of people. And it's like saying our insurance system is no good because you can't get open heart surgery in Plattsburgh. It's because Plattsburgh is a very small town. People in Plattsburgh who want heart surgery have to come south to Albany Medical Center or Strong Memorial to get their heart surgery. And that's not because of how we pay for health care. It's because you can't run a major hospital in Plattsburgh because of the size.
All right, gentlemen, just a moment.
In Canada have been going on for decades. This is not a management problem. It's a systemic problem. I was reading a report a couple of days ago. It's like the 21st or the 22nd annual report on wait lists in Canada. I'm sorry, if you have a 21 or 22 year anniversary of your report on waits in Canada for needed care, you have more than a management problem. You have a systemic problem.
Do you know how long somebody has to wait for a total knee replacement in Rochester? Longer than they do in Toronto. It's months. So, you know, having a free market system does not guarantee a lack of wait times.
All right, look, I've got
to... We do not have a free market system, I can assure you of that.
All right, well, let me go ahead and say to our listeners, we've got a full panel here, and we're trying to get through more calls as we go through the rest of the hour talking about single payer. Dr. David Stornelli, a primary care internist in Rochester, is in studio, along with Assemblyman Dick Godfried from Manhattan. Sean Parnell is on the line, a research fellow for health policy at the Heartland Institute. And some of the common questions we're getting online, and we're getting a lot, have to do with the cost and who pays for it. Here comes Richard writing to us. If the Assemblyman doesn't want us to trust the insurance companies, can he give us one good reason to trust the government? New York has the highest taxes in the United States, and the government will set the prices. We're going to let him handle that question in a moment. And let's get to David in Pittsburgh, who's on the phone, who also wants to ask some similar questions. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. My real concern is the level of corruption that exists in Albany, and it seems like virtually every agency in the state government. And to hand them a whole great big additional pile of money and expect that it won't be just siphoned off into the pockets of the friends and so on of the people who are allegedly running the state government is just something that's beyond comprehension. I believe that Vermont, I've never heard of any extensive corruption in Vermont. I think that they have a good shot at getting this thing to work. And I've experienced single payer in England, and no wait in the emergency room whatsoever. Walk in and they take care of you. No bill when you walk out. It was wonderful. People were friendly. It was just a wonderful medical experience there. But to think that these people who, for example, will, if there's no federal agency like the EPA to put a handle on the diversion of funds for the Tappan Zee Bridge. I mean, it's just typical. If we ever had that big pool of money, what was supposed to be allocated to health care, Lord only knows where it would go.
All right, David.
I can't imagine it would be going towards health care.
David, thank you for the call. And so there's two prongs there, Assemblyman Gottfried. Number one, he doesn't trust New York State, and your assembly doesn't have very high approval ratings. I'm not talking about you personally. I'm talking about in general.
Yep.
Is that a fair concern?
It's a fair concern. I would say the one thing government is actually reasonably good at is sending checks out. And that's why Social Security is a popular program. Medicare is a popular program. To look a little closer to home, if somebody was suggesting that why would we want to trust government with paying for our schools and we should get rid of the whole concept of public schools, I don't think someone running on that platform would do very well. Part of what would guarantee that the New York Health Plan would be a high-quality plan, apart from the fact that the statute would identify specific revenue, you'd know what the revenue is going in, it would be going into a trust fund that is legally obligated to do nothing other than paying for the plan. The most important safeguard on the plan is that well-connected New Yorkers will be depending on this plan for their health care, as well as people who are essentially powerless.
Okay, and briefly, Richard wants to know.
And that's the guarantee that it'll be a good plan.
And Richard and others want to know, they say, look, Vermont hasn't even figured out how they're paying for this yet, and it's been several years.
Yeah.
How is New York going to pay for single payer?
It's spelled out in the bill. There would be a broad-based, progressively graduated assessment on payroll paid by employers and employees, and there would also be a progressively graduated assessment on non-payroll income like capital gains and dividends. That's all spelled out in the bill.
Sean, I know that's a concern for you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was actually going to point out one of the problems that Vermont is having in terms of figuring out how they're going to finance their plan is just the scale of the money that's needed. Vermont has about a $1.5 billion general fund budget currently. That's their state budget. They're looking at having to come up with $2.2 billion each year to fund their single-payer health plan. Basically, they're talking about more than doubling the tax levels in Vermont in order to do single-payer. And, obviously, if you're talking about doubling tax levels, sure, some people are going to save money because now, they get rid of the premiums, but they still have to pay the taxes. They're going to be net gain. Some people are going to be net losers, though, and in a lot of cases, that's going to be your small business owners or people who are of, more modest means, maybe. I don't know the specifics of the Assemblyman's plan as far as how high the tax rates are going to have to go in New York, but I suspect it's fairly substantial. I actually wanted to ask the Assemblyman, what is going to be the tax on somebody who makes $75,000 or $100,000 or $200,000 in New York?
All right.
What's the impact of that?
Let's go ahead and ask that.
I can't tell you what the exact rate is going to be. I can tell you that the total charge that New York will be paying will be on the order of $20 billion, probably on the order of 20 to 30% less than what we now spend, because we're not going to be paying for the army of bureaucrats that insurance companies hire, the army of administrative personnel that doctors and hospitals now have to hire. We're not going to be paying for insurance company profit margins. And so the overall charge is going to be smaller. And, any small business, unless it's a small hedge fund, they are almost guaranteed to be spending less than they are now spending if they're providing health coverage. Almost every New Yorker will have more money in their pocket under a universal health plan than they have today.
There's someone else on the line who probably disagrees, and I've got to try to get one more phone call in. That's John in Rochester. Got to keep it tight, John. Go.
Okay, gentlemen. I get nervous when I hear I'm from government and I'm here to help you. Mr. Godfrey sounded like Barack Obama. If you like your health care, you can keep it. It's going to be cheaper, etc. But my point is this. When government gets a hold of a program, Social Security and Medicare, they're both going broke because of government. you've got to get the you've got to get programs out of the hands of the government and in the hands of the private sector with proper regulations. We have those proper regulations. Government is the problem.
All right, John.
Not the solution.
John, thank you for the call. Dick, again, he not trusting the government will do this well and efficiently.
Yeah, well, the reason you can count on this being a quality plan is because people with wealth and influence in New York are going to be covered by the same plan as the rest of us. And, you know, it's true. Our public schools, Social Security, Medicare, none of them is, you know, has a big profit margin, but they shouldn't be. They should always be kept on a short leash. Government programs should always be on the verge of starvation because otherwise we're obviously putting too much money into them. So Medicare is not going broke. Medicare runs on a very narrow margin. Our public schools run on a very narrow margin. And that's how it should be.
All right.
Real quickly.
Last word, Sean. You got 20 seconds. Go.
Yeah. Medicare is going bankrupt in terms of not having enough money in the trust fund in a couple of years to pay its bills. I suggest to New Yorkers, if you're looking for somebody to talk about health care, it not be somebody who says things like Medicare is not going bankrupt, because it is. That's just crazy talk.
Sean, I do appreciate your time. From the Heartland Institute, a research fellow for health policy, thank you for taking the hour for us, Sean.
Thank you.
And briefly, before we sign off with our guest in studio, Michelle Faust, for people listening and they've got more questions or comments, they can go where?
Understanding the Affordable Care Act is the project that we are putting on all of our platforms, radio, web, and television, wxxi.org/ACA. Send us your questions, ACAWXXI@WXXI.org.
But, you know, as you said, people still want to talk single payer, even though you tell them talk ACA, they still want to talk single payer.
Well, you know what? We'll probably be doing more stories that deal with single payer. We'll be doing everything to do with affordable care and answering questions of all ilk. So please keep them coming.
All right. Assemblyman Gottfried, if people want to see more about the bill here, where can they go to find more?
NYHCampaign.org.
NYHCampaign.org. And Dr. Stornelli, it's been a wild hour, but look, I really appreciate you taking it for us and sharing your time with us, too. Thank you.
Thanks, Evan.
Wow. Michelle Faust, a lot of interest in this, and I promise our listeners we'll revisit single payer many times. There's a lot of interest in this subject and more. Thanks for your time. Thanks to our great engineers, Randy and Juan, behind the glass today. I'm Evan Dawson. This is Connections on member-supported public radio.